This is Juliette Kayyem, and from WGBH News, this is Security Mom, the podcast about our homeland, unclassified.
I think it goes to our version of the hero story, right? Yeah. I mean, Ashley White, you know, was a young woman who didn't measure 5'3" fully. Right. She was what her ranger trainer called, you know, the gal who had the smile of a Disneyland greeter. She was this incredible, almost Martha Stewart like character in that she loved to cook, loved to bake, loved to make dinner for her husband, who was really a huge source of support. Her ROTC Kent State sweetheart. And at the same time, she was a person who embraced this whole idea of and, right? She was also somebody who would put 40 pounds of weight on her back and march for miles in the Ravenna Arsenal near her hometown in Ohio. She would be able to go to the gym and do CrossFit 3 times a day. She was the one who would do 25 pull-ups from a dead hang because she was a former gymnast. And when it came time to climb ropes, she was among the only ones who could go up and down a 17-foot rope 2 or 3 times using only her arms because she was trained as a gymnast as a kid.
That's Gail Zamok-Lamon, a journalist and author of the book Ashley's War, describing Ashley White, or who they called Little White for her petite physique. Lamon came upon the story of Ashley by happenstance. She was giving a speech and someone said, "Hey, do you know about these women who are in Afghanistan?" And that led to research and writing about a pretty incredible story, a band of sisters who were in the war in Afghanistan. So I have to take you back a little bit to January of 2013, when then Secretary of Defense Leon Panetta waived the combat exclusion rules. Combat exclusion rules were the rules that said women can be part of the military, but they cannot fight in combat. It was a big moment. There's no question about it. And it really did reflect a lot of the changes going on in the military over the previous 10 years in the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. What the ending of the combat exclusion rule essentially said was that the mythology that the Pentagon had been living under, this mythology that women could be and support war efforts but not be in war. They gave special designations to it with words like assigned and attached, that these fictions could no longer sustain themselves, right? That you just could not tell the difference between who was supporting combat troops and who was actually in combat. In Afghanistan, you know, there's really no battlefields. This isn't Saving Private Ryan, where there's Germans on one side and Americans on another. There aren't trenches. This is sort of hand-to-hand combat. And it involves a lot of troops going into urban and rural areas and meeting with people and talking to them about who might be there and who might be the enemy. And what the Pentagon discovered was that they would enter these very rural towns and villages, and because of custom in Afghanistan, the male troops could not actually talk to 50% of the Afghanistan population, mainly the woman. And so over time, more and more U.S. female troops started to go with the male troops into these villages to get intelligence, talk to villagers, learn what was going on. And the Pentagon for years was going through all sorts of contortions to maximize women's role on the battlefield, but make sure that they weren't actually in combat. And the end of this rule basically just reflected that women were already in combat. So who were these women and why were they needed?
Yeah, and I think one of the first moments in Ashley's War, you see Admiral Olson, then leading Special Operations Command, really coming to the conclusion that America would never kill its way to the end of its wars. And those wars had already been going on a decade by then, or pretty close to. And the idea was that knowledge was being left behind. And because male soldiers couldn't speak to women, especially in the most conservative and traditional parts of Afghanistan, where the insurgency was strongest, all this knowledge, all this understanding of what was actually happening on the ground was being left behind. And in tactical terms, that meant that people were hiding things or leaving things in women's quarters that they knew wouldn't be searched and knew wouldn't be found. And so all of this information and intel wasn't being found either because male soldiers couldn't enter into those rooms.
Ashley White was a member of an all-woman team recruited by Special Ops to go on Army Ranger and Navy SEAL mission trips back in 2001 in Afghanistan. She was in this band of sisters assigned to what was called cultural support teams recruited for the battlefield. A cultural support team, or CST, is really a benign name for a groundbreaking concept. It gave name to what was already occurring before.
I think what is so important to know is that women had been doing this job in one-offs for years, right? And one of the first chapters of Ashley's War is, you know, there were mechanics and medics who were recruited to go on these missions with very little training, if any at all. And what the CSTs were, these cultural support teams, were actually just to formalize and train and recruit, train and deploy a group of young women specifically for this mission. Because young women had been doing this, you know, soldiers had been doing this mission for years, but with very little preparation.
And were they armed when they went into these Afghan villages?
Or, of course. What was their real experience? Combat. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, this was not, a hearts and minds mission. They were seeing the kind of combat experienced by less than 5% of the entire United States military. They were on nighttime operations alongside some of the most tested and, most frequently deployed teams in the special operations communities. They were out alongside Rangers who had done 10, 11, 12 deployments in the post-9/11 wars. And they were there because they were needed. They were there to fill a security gap. They weren't there for a social program.
And so they presumably got trained in the same way that the men did. And I mean, maybe even just talking about Ashley specifically, were they able to do it? How did it work? Because you always hear this notion, well, women, we need different standards for women because they couldn't do what the men were going to do.
They were not receiving the same kind of training. They were not recruited to be Rangers. They were not recruited to be SEALs, but they were recruited to be alongside them. So they had 6 weeks of training because, as everybody was saying, we're building a plane in mid-flight. They were trying to get this capability onto the battlefield as fast as possible. Of course, there was some criticism of that, but most people understood this was war. So they had 6 weeks of physical training, of weapons training, of cultural training, recruited and then chosen after a selection process called 100 Hours of Hell, and then brought them to Fort Bragg to choose, you know, because they had to be very fit, very fierce, and not just physically fierce, right? You had to be the kind of person who had the mental toughness to go on those kinds of very kinetic special operations missions that were by nature unpredictable.
100 hours of hell. That's what the woman had to endure to be allowed to be assigned to these male forces. But they were good at it, this band of sisters. One scene in the book that stood out to me is at one stage, Ashley White is training and she passes by a male combat troop who are also running, and she passes right by them and she hears the leader of the male troop say, "Oh my God, we're being passed by a girl." And so the woman could do this. They could be physically strong enough to join the men in essentially combat. And once they did make it into these special teams, they had their own code of conduct. And they called it Operation Fit In. They had no other choice. And the question is, did it work?
And, you know, I think they took that very seriously. They understood that these guys had been continuously deployed since 9/11. They were not used to having people who didn't have the same recruiting cycle, training cycle, and deployment cycle with them, let alone having female soldiers alongside them, right? So they understood they had a whole lot to prove. And the answer to your question is performance. They wanted to go out there and show immediately that they could add value, they could bring real service to the mission, they could find things, help find people that otherwise wouldn't have been found. You know, they all went there to serve with purpose, never to prove a point. And I think if you would ask them what they wanted to do, it was to do their job well alongside the best.
I have to be honest here. The question of whether the CSTs worked is a hard one to answer given the nature of the war in Afghanistan. President Obama, recognizing that the Afghan war was not going as we planned, recently changed course and has committed U.S. troops for several years more. I'm not sure we can be the judge of whether the CSTs were effective. What we do know is that because women like Ashley were doing what they were doing in Afghanistan, that the military got comfortable with the notion of women in combat. And that is how the military begins to rethink the role of women in its forces.
You know, when Kimberly out one night helps find the intel item they're seeking in a baby's wet diaper in the women's quarters that otherwise wouldn't have been found, and proves herself to a very skeptical, you know, team of SEALs. I think that is what shows what they brought to the battlefield. And in June 2013, the special operations gave this press conference, which C-SPAN covered, and I was watching at home sort of terrified that they were going to give away this story because I was so obsessed with it already by that time. And he actually, the Major General of Special Operations, gives a shout out to Ashley and her teammates and all these female soldiers and says they performed tremendously on the battlefield. And the direct quote, which is in the epilogue of Ashley's War, is that they may well have laid the foundation for ultimate integration.
What happened to Ashley?
Yeah, on October 22nd, 2011, First Lieutenant Ashley White was killed alongside Sergeant First Class Christopher DeMay and Private First Class Christopher Horns on a night raid that started like any other nighttime operation and ended when things went very badly very quickly. And her death really threw into a very public spotlight this program that had been created to live in the shadows. And at her funeral, the head of Army Special Operations Command, which, you know, first of all, it's quite noteworthy that he was at her funeral. And he comes and speaks because the combat ban was in place. No one knew how America would react to a young female soldier dying alongside, you know, a young Ranger and a very experienced Ranger on a nighttime combat operation. And he, the head of Army Special Operations, says, make no mistake about it. These women are warriors, and they have written a new chapter in what it means to be a female in the United States Army. And I think they, you know, Special Operations tries to pay respect and to show that these young women were out there for a reason, and the reason was the mission.
Ashley doesn't make it home. She does not survive her time in Afghanistan. But Gail's point here is key, right? That if the military is going to change, essentially, if women are going to change the hearts and minds of the male leadership, they have to be out there. They have to be out there fighting the same wars. And so throughout the book, you hear stories of women who took their helmets off so that they could talk one-on-one with Afghan women and learn from them rather than being in these intimidating helmets. And one of my favorite examples, Ashley and her friends learned to use Spanx. Yes, Spanx, that thing that we all put on to fit into our dresses. They learned to use Spanx to be able to fit better into uniforms that were designed for male soldiers. And through all of these examples, these women began to transform the hearts and minds of the leadership at the Pentagon.
You know, this question I get asked so often is, well, what did the men make of these women? And I always point to Scotty Marks, who is this Ranger who served 12 deployments in the post-9/11 war, was more at home in Balad, in Iraq, than he was at home in Georgia by the time it was all over. And he is tasked with training Ashley and her teammates for Ranger missions. 1 week, is 7 or 8 days pre-mission training. And, you know, he starts really skeptical. And by the end, he looks around and talks to some of the other Rangers that he's working with and says, you know, these soldiers may well be our own Tuskegee Airmen one day. They're going to make history and no one knows about them. And I think his humor, and, you know, one day he's trying to figure out why they're all so hard on themselves. And he gives them this speech that is both funny and really touching, which is, you know, listen, you all are all used to being around people who are less good at everything than you are. You've never been around people who are just as tough, just as fierce, just as intense, just as funny, right, as all of you are. And now, too bad, because you're diamonds among diamonds and you better get used to it. And you don't, you know, you want to be better at something, work hard at it, but don't beat yourself up because you're going to fail, but you're going to also succeed. And each one of these people next to you is going to make you even better.
What is going to make you even better? That's the question for the Pentagon. How do we have a 21st century military? And that's why this question of women in combat is really a national security imperative. I mean, if we abandon 50% of America's population and don't let them become part of our military, we are essentially cutting ourselves short. And that becomes the national security issue of our time. Women will make future war efforts better. And Ashley and her friends showed that.
To me, it's always been about getting the best people in the right job to defend and protect the United States of America. And that's what the story was about. The story was about soldiers who, when America said, we need you, they raised their hands not once to be part of the military, but twice to be part of building this plane in mid-flight among some of the most tested men of special operations. And so that's, I mean, the lens that I've always seen this entire conversation. I think it gets much more emotional than that, but I think that's the fact base from which, as a storyteller, you always try to approach it.
When you talk about that emotion, one of those emotions is the risk that these women will encounter that maybe it's paternalism, but, you know, the fears that exposing women to the kind of combat and the kind of harms that men face in war is just different. And that's sort of part of the dialogue as well, the emotional dialogue, at least.
Yeah. And I mean, I've talked to Rangers who would talk to me about that for certain. And then I talked to others who said, that's ridiculous because we're in war and you're always worried about the person next to you. The whole thing is why it's called a band of brothers, right? You're worried about getting the person to your right and to your left home, right? Making sure everybody gets back safely. And so, you know, people have different views on this for certain. And I understand that. And I wanted Ashley's War to sort of show that conversation. But, you know, most of the Rangers I talked to said, you know, we're already there. Right. 2 years after Ashley's death, Captain Jenny Moreno died. And she was a nurse who was trying to get also a CST, but a nurse as well, and was trying to get medical care to some of her Ranger brothers. And that's how she died. And that's war and that's combat. And that's the brotherhood and sisterhood of arms.
The brotherhood of arms. But the truth is, women are different than men physically. And that is an issue on the battlefield.
You know, there were a lot of laughs during the interviews about these questions because it's all of these soldiers said, I've had my body for a lot of years. The biology just isn't that big of a deal. You know, I can take care of it. It's not a national security issue. But they were really funny about it because think about it. Most of the men who were recruiting them, training them and helping them to deploy had never worked around women soldiers in that kind of proximity, right, on those kinds of combat operations. So it was, you know, there's this scene in Ashley's War where one of the Rangers hears this noise. He said, well, who's that? Who's taking a piss? And he realizes that, you know, it's Little White. You know, it's Ashley White. And he sort of has this moment where he's, okay, move on. You know, and so it happens once and then everybody gets over it. And the same thing with menstrual cycles, right? You know, some of these poor trainers, you know, you can just feel for them because they've never been up close to a female soldier who might have to deal with that. But I think the fact that these women just went back, did their business and went right back to work, it was just not a big deal, set the tone for the whole story.
Right, because the CSTs and what Ashley did and ultimately her sacrifice really were laying the foundation for the larger debate about the role of women in combat. Up until 2013, the Pentagon had this combat exclusion rule was said, women cannot be in combat. But essentially, after you have over, 100 women die, apparently not in combat, right? In Afghanistan and Iraq, there was a lot of political pressure to change it. And part of what Ashley and her teams did was change the way I think the Pentagon thought about what women could do. And in some ways, that's sort of the foundation that you're writing about.
Absolutely. You know, even if America wasn't paying attention, special operations leaders were. The military was watching. Everybody was watching. You know, everybody who knew about this program, particularly in the special operations community, was watching to see, would these women perform? Would they be able to bring value to the mission? Could they keep up with Rangers, right? People who are incredibly physically tested as well as mentally tested in combat. And, you know, I never would say this was all perfect and flawless or anything like that, but did they make a difference? You know, one Ranger first sergeant said to me, who served 13 deployments, and the post 9/11 wars, said to me, a job well done sticks out. I do not care who's doing it. And I think that is the legacy of Ashley White and all of her teammates. And, you know, Mrs. White told me this beautiful story the very first time we met, which is in Ashley's War, and really is the reason why it was a book and not a piece.
Yeah.
And that was this young mother who came up to her at Ashley's funeral with her daughter by the hand. And she said, Mrs. White, you know, I brought my daughter here today because I wanted her to know what a hero was. And I wanted her to know that heroes could be women, too. And that moment for Mrs. White, you know, she said to me, we lost generations of Ashley, but maybe part of her legacy is getting credit to young women who would never see credit themselves, but who answered their country's call when America asked.
So where are we now? Women like Ashley were working in these nicely named cultural support teams, but they seem like combat to the rest of us. And ultimately, their contributions lead Leon Panetta in 2013 to end the combat exclusion rules. But we're not quite done yet, and that's the important point here. As part of Panetta's guidelines, he asked each of the forces, each the Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines, Coast Guard, all of them, to come back to the Pentagon and tell them why women couldn't be part of particular troops. In other words, he just changed the default and said, you tell us why women can't be in special ops or covert ops or whatever else. And so over the last couple years, the military and its various branches have been bringing women on to figure out whether they can pass training, get the resources they need, if they're skilled enough, if they're physically fit enough, if they're mentally strong enough to be combat soldiers. In fact, three women, including one mother of two children, just recently passed the Army Ranger School. So things are looking optimistic. But by January of 2016, the now Secretary of Defense, Ash Carter, is going to have to assess what to do if the branches come back and say, listen, we like the ladies, but we don't want them in these particular forces.
Look, I think change is challenging. There are definitely frictions that are created. But I think for most military leaders, the conversation is about setting the standard and having service members meet that standard, period. And, you know, I think, you know, you see Secretary Carter, who will make the decision ultimately by January 1, whether all roles open to women or not, has talked about, we need the most talented people we can in the right jobs. Why would we shut off half the population when the pool of people who are good at these roles is really small anyway? Yeah. So, I mean, me personally, I've always seen this as a national security question. And I think it'll be very interesting to see where all of the conversations come down. And it's a fascinating time because how often do you get to see history unfold before your eyes on something you're working on? Not very.
But the conversations today don't just involve whether women can be equals in combat. A parallel story in some ways related to the combat exclusion rules, right? A parallel story is going on in the Pentagon right now involving how the Pentagon treats women, whether they're in combat or not. We've been hearing the stories of sexual harassment, of rape, of women who go to their superiors and are ignored after repeated sexual harassment or sexual assaults on them. And it is safe to say that the Pentagon has not been taking this as seriously as it should. The sexual harassment and sexual assault charges really do have an impact on how we think about women in the military. Gail explains.
It's so interesting. When, you know, when you're working on a story like this, I mean, these interviews were so intimate, so moving, so powerful, and just incredibly funny and desperately heartbreaking all at the same time. And so I didn't talk much about what I was working on to anybody other than a few close folks. But when I occasionally would, I'd say, I'm working on a special operations story. People be like, oh, that's awesome. You know, I loved Lone Survivor. I loved American Sniper. You know, that's great. And then you'd say, and it has women. And it was crickets. And then, honestly, the next question would be everyone's, the exact same way over and over, which is, oh, so is it about rape or PTSD? And I, the first time I heard it, I was shocked. By the third time, I was really prepared because I said, it's about valor, which is the missing story about what's been happening on the battlefield. And I think the fact that that is a missing story has had consequences on those two other incredibly important storylines, which we are grappling with as a country, because we don't see them as veterans, as heroes, as people in uniform serving America. We ask the question about rape or PTSD first. And I wanted Ashley's War, even though it has two soldiers who, one soldier and one Marine, who are survivors of military sexual assault, to be a reflection of these women's service and what they did on the battlefield, as well as the awful things that happened to them while being in uniform.
I have no doubt that bringing women into combat is a very big change for how we think about war and maybe even all of our notions of paternalism, that men fight and women support. It is an antiquated notion. And if we actually thought about the national security of our country and the kind of wars that we will be fighting and the kind of military we want to reflect to the rest of the world, bringing women on as equals, trained and supported and equipped, just like the men, really is in America's national security interest. Now, as we await a final decision by Secretary Ash Carter about the extent to which women will be brought into combat roles, it is important to remember stories like Ashley White's, woman who could do it and did do it and died in the service of our nation. Change will be hard, there is no doubt about it, but change has already happened. You can subscribe to the Security Mom podcast in iTunes, and while you're there, please rate and review. It makes it easier for people to find us. We have links to Stitcher and iTunes and SoundCloud, and we'll be posting all of our episodes on our website. That's wgbhnews.org/securitymom. You can reach me at securitymom@wgbh.org, and you can find me on Twitter at Juliet Kayem, K-A-Y-Y-E-M. Security Mom is a production of WGBH News. Our producer is Mary Dew, and special thanks to Dion Lefkowitz. I'm Juliet Kayem.